think his name was Michael, but I'll call him.
He's trying to be shy. Hey, Mr. Shy.
Good afternoon. I'd like to bring the House Interim Committee on General Government Consumer Protection into order, and we're going to start out today by having an informational meeting, and then we will go into work session for introduction of committee legislative concepts. So with that, I'd like to open an informational meeting that's going to describe to us and give us a report on the recommendations for performing criminal records checks. And with that, I'll open that informational meeting and have Sarah Miller from Department of Administrative Services and anybody you want to bring with you. And committee, if you recall, we spent some time last session dealing with and talking about criminal records checks and trying to figure out a way that the state could save money, perhaps, of consolidating some of those efforts and lessening the requirements on individuals having multiple background checks for different agencies, amongst a few other things. And during the interim, a work group was working on this with the help of DAS leading up that effort. And with that, I'm just going to turn it over to Sarah. You can get us up to speed with what the group talked about and what kind of recommendations they have.
Co-Chair Holvey, co-chair Wisnett, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Miller. I'm the Deputy Chief Operating Officer for the Department of Administrative Services. I have with me at the table Twyla Lawson, who is a senior HR consultant in our Chief Human Resource Office and was the prime staff person in support of the committee. As Co-Chair Holvey said, I will walk through for you the highlights of the report, which we delivered, I think, on November 30th to the Committee Services Administrator and Jan on your behalf, and happy to take any questions as we go along. The House Bill 4091 required a certain number of statutory participants, which are outlined on the slide in front of you. These are agencies who do a large number of criminal background checks and other parties who we believed would be interested in the criminal background check process. The bottom bullets, which are italicized, the statute called out specific representation in terms of an agency that licenses individuals. We chose the Health Licensing Agency as the participant. A human services organization, we chose Oregon Rehabilitation Association. We chose Oregon school employees to represent the school employees. Benton County's HR director participated as a representative of local government. And then we asked the American Civil Liberties Union of Oregon to participate as an organization that advocates for the privacy rights of individuals. Those were the statutorily required participants. In addition, the bill gave the Department of Administrative Services the opportunity to name additional members to the workforce, and the five or six bullets you see here are the additional agencies or bodies that we asked to participate, trying to increase the diversity of local government representation. We wanted the legislature to have representation, and your committee administrator, Jan Nordlund, participated in that process for us. And then on the bottom, there were some advocate organizations who asked when we were standing up the work group to be officially named as representatives. We believe that it was important for their voices to be heard, but not to participate as full-seated members of the committee. And so the Oregon Alliance, the Independent Adult Foster Home Association, the Department of Transportation, and the YMCA participated in most of the work group meetings and had opportunity to provide comments. So the report that you have in front of you is adopted by that group of folks.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Mrs. Miller, who is the Oregon Alliance? Who is that?
I'm going to let Twyla Lawson, our... Okay. Do you want to know who the exact member
yeah.
was?
Yeah, well, no, who they represented, what the organization.
So I think that we'll get back to you on that one.
Thank you.
House Bill 4091 asked us to consider the protection of the public in the evaluation of the criminal records background check process, to maintain high standards of safety and accuracy in that process, acknowledge and address the disparate procedures that Representative Holvey talked about, the differences in the way state agencies approach that process and the differences between state law and federal law requirements. Interested in trying to create the most timely response possible, reducing the number and types specifically of criminal records checks that would be required, and allowing for the transferability of criminal records checks among agencies and organizations. So frequently, Oregonians get background checked by multiple agencies in service to similar populations. You also asked us to determine the feasibility of developing a single system for conducting background checks and suggested that that be administered by the Department of State Police. You asked us to look into the cost, accuracy, and quality assurance processes associated with the work that the State Police does, associated with other than the State Police providing criminal background checks. You asked us to look at providing for a system to update criminal records checks when certain particular events occur, and you asked us to look into determining the feasibility of allowing authorized people to keep criminal records checks and mostly fingerprint records on file over time. So the picture that you have in front of you gives you a general overview of the criminal record check process. So in general, an application is submitted to an entity. That entity gathers identifying information, including things like places that you've lived, if you've lived outside the state, other names that you've had, in most cases takes your fingerprints. Then depending on the kind of criminal record check that you're getting, you go through multiple system technology checks. Could be a check with the FBI. It could be a check with the state police. It could be other checks against systems that have information. Then it's important for you to understand that the review of results and the fitness determination about those results happens at a programmatic level. So the agencies who are requesting the initial criminal records check are the folks who decide whether the results that come back from the check make a person eligible or ineligible for whatever they're being cleared for. And the eventual approval or denial associated with a criminal record check is done always at the agency or programmatic level. There's lots of variation, and many times the requirements for individual stages are different from agency to agency, or even sometimes programs within agencies, which I think is sort of what generated the initial frustration and genesis of this committee's desire to have additional looking at streamlining of this process. But this gives you an overall sense. The work group came up with really sort of four major areas where they thought there were potential for systematic changes. The first is implementation of a technology we call live scan, which is the actual electronic capture of fingerprints and transmittal of those fingerprints through technology to the state police. This solution would do two things in the state process. It would allow faster transmission to the state police, which in turn returns faster results, so it would decrease the amount of time a person was waiting on a criminal records check clearance, but also probably more importantly, it limits the number of fingerprint-based rejections that happen. So when you use old ink-based technology, sometimes the fingerprint cards aren't clear enough to actually be run, and so frequently, maybe not frequently, but occasionally, fingerprint cards get rejected and have to be resubmitted. And this technology does a verification of the readability of it actually when you're in the office and it's been captured. So that if it has to be redone, it's done immediately while you're there. Again, decreasing the amount of time that would be required in a criminal records check process. The second area that the work group looked into was the creation of what they call a clean box registry. So a clean box registry essentially creates a voluntary pre-clearance list, particularly for post-job offer checks. So there was a bill in the 2011 session, I believe, that was introduced by some child welfare programs. It did not actually pass, but the basic concept was it would create an eligibility list for successfully cleared fingerprint-based background checked people. So if you had a clear fingerprint-based background check, you could volunteer to be placed on the registry, paying an application fee. Once your name was on the registry quarterly, there would be a LEDS, Law Enforcement Data System, name-based check to make sure that you were still in good standing and that the registry would allow you to provide proof of having passed a background check without additional wait time post-job offer. The idea in concept was the registry would be good for 2 years, but could be renewed after re-update of information and additional application fee. So it essentially creates a pre-approved list of people who've had a background check and provides regular checks on their criminal status. The third area that the committee looked into was consideration of what they call a wrap-back program. So wrap-back is essentially proactive reporting of the existence of a wrap sheet. So if you're in a situation where your fingerprints are kept on file, this process would allow the system to inform an employer or another designated entity when an individual is arrested if the fingerprint cards are retained by a central repository. So now, in most criminal record check processes, fingerprint cards are destroyed after the completion of the criminal record check process. And so that prevents us from checking the fingerprints of people who've been arrested against a central repository. If we were allowed to keep those fingerprints centrally, this system would allow when a fingerprint of an offender got ran, the system could notify a employer-designated entity. Important to note here, the federal government, FBI, has a project in process to implement a wrap-back for some of its federal background check process, but that process isn't expected to implement until 2014. And so from an efficiency and effectiveness perspective, it's probably a little cutting edge for Oregon to consider wrap-back immediately because the efficiencies gained are when you connect the state system with the federal system. And so we don't expect the federal government to implement their program until 2014.
So a quick question about that wrap-back system. And you made the comment that it would give an update when somebody was arrested. What happens in the case where somebody is arrested and later acquitted? Does that information stay on the wrap-back system?
Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, I don't know the answer to that question. I believe that the wrap-back is the appearance of arrest, not formally tracking through conviction. And so I imagine that the onus would be on the person whose background check had been cleared to provide proof that they were later acquitted to have that record removed. But we can certainly look into that and get back to you, at least as how the federal program is designed.
So currently, when DAS or a state agency does a criminal records check and they find an arrest, do they make employment decisions based on simply just the arrest that's on the criminal history?
Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, no is the answer to that question. The criminal record information, generally, if it's associated with employment, most offers are made contingent of clearing a background check, and we check that consistently over time. So if I was to receive a job offer today to go to work for the Department of Administrative Services and I cleared my record check, but a year from now went to work for the Department of Human Services, if I had been arrested in the meantime, that may come back on my criminal records check, but would be a dialogue I was having with the Department of Human Services. And that's where we were talking about that programmatically, it depends on the entity doing the check, whether the presence of a record would even cause a conversation about subject to employment. Because for many people, the job that they're being offered is irrelevant to the criminal record that may or may not be present. And so most agencies have to promulgate specific rules that talk about the sorts of infringements that would be potentially employment problems for them. So,
okay.
The final area that House Bill 4091 asked the work group to look into was the creation of a single system to be administered by the state police. And for many of the reasons that I've talked about, which is that the rules vary from program to program and the applicability of the particular criminal convictions matters relative to the kind of work or volunteer opportunity that's being checked against, The work group's recommendation is that the creation of a single system is not feasible because while all criminal record checks go through the state police right now for Oregon state agencies, the application of the results and the feasibility of the results compared to the opportunity did not seem viable for the state police to do. However, the work group did talk about that as we look towards implementation of clusters of agencies, clusters of like programs, you know, if you look in the 10-year plan as part of the governor's recommended budget, it talks about groups of programs that service similar populations. There may, in fact, be advantage to streamlining inside of particular groups of state agencies. So, for example, if you took public safety agencies, there may be opportunity for them to streamline the background check process inside of the public safety agencies because their requirements would be really similar. The kinds of offenses that would be problematic would be really similar. And so you could probably much more easily come to a list of shared understanding about what should be the criteria for a single process inside of a particular cluster of programs. And the 10-year plan and the enterprise leadership team, which are the agency directors of the 20 largest state agencies, provides an opportunity to talk about really tactical implementation of that policy strategy should the body be interested in that. So in terms of next steps, Representative Nathanson asked me to extend her apologies. She intended to be here as a practicing member of the work group committee representing the state and local government efficiency task force, but she's co-chairing the emergency board on general government right now. I understand from Representative Nathanson she has had 5 bills drafted that implement recommendations of the work group. She's been having conversations, I think, with the co-chair and other members about what the appropriate vehicle to introduce those bills are. But, you know, there was a, I think, impassioned plea by Co-Chair Holvey and by Representative Nathanson to the work group that we didn't want to just get people together in the interim and talk about a lot of stuff. We wanted to see real action come out. And the representative's bills, I think, actually capture the implementable action items from the work group. We've also been having conversation inside the chief HR office in our agency about the tactical implementation of some of these recommendations with agency directors. So many of the human resource shops in state agencies are starting to talk about collaboration of both hiring processes and support of applicants. So the fold-in of streamlining the criminal records check process, at least as it relates to employment at state agencies, is certainly something that we believe is possible to happen, particularly inside of particular agency clusters. And so we've begun having some of those conversations with state agency HR directors. Now, obviously, the scope of the work group was much broader than just state agency employment, because lots of folks who are subject to criminal records checks are people who, you know, work with children or volunteer in particular settings. And so we have more work, I think, to do about implementation of these recommendations for stuff of outside of state agencies. But a large number of the criminal record checks that happen are related to state agency employment. And so we think there's opportunity for immediate streamlining there. That's all the material I have for you today. I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions from the committee?
Representative Wisnett.
Mrs. Miller, back to your chart 6 where it has the process. Where did state police, were they in this?
Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, what happens is that the state police are the recipients of the information that has been gathered. So in some cases, you as a person having your criminal record check fill out an application form which asks for a bunch of identifying information. You're given a form from whatever entity is authorizing the criminal records check, and then in my case I appeared at the state police to actually have my fingerprints done. In some cases you can have the fingerprint done outside and have the card sent to state police. So between gathering identifying information and then in most cases they're the entity doing the information search and returning results back to the program.
Thank you. Follow up, please.
Go ahead.
Does the state police send it to the FBI if that's necessary, or how does the FBI come in here?
Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, I'm going to let Twyla Lawson, our senior HR consultant, answer that for you.
Co-Chair Hovey and Co-Chair Wisnett, yes. And the state police submits the information to the FBI electronically. The FBI only collects electronic prints, and then the FBI submits that information back to state police, who then shares it with the agency.
Another question, Mr. Chair. It costs us more to send the state to the FBI, or why could the FBI not be there and not the state police?
Co-Chair Holvey and Co-Chair Wisnett, the FBI requires a single entity within the state of Oregon to submit that information. And in our case, in the state of Oregon, it is the state police.
Final question, please.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for doing this, and I've been involved in this for about 3 or 4 sessions, and I guess still again in all your meetings and research, how many people are involved in this, and how much money is it costing the state of Oregon? And again, the primary purpose is to protect the people and the kids that are involved, but we still seems like we're spending an awful lot of money to do this. I've talked to several people, different agencies, especially in child welfare and things like that, and smart readers, and it's really burdening the programs. It's hurting our programs to be able to do this because we have to have all this. So I don't know the solution. You've spent a lot of time and effort, I know, to do it, but I was hoping that there could be some, duplication or eliminate that, or that your check is good for 6 months, and then you say, okay, well, 5 months, I committed a serious crime. So I don't know which.
Co-Chair Holvey, Co-Chair Wisnett, I understand your concern, and in fact I think that Representative Nathanson's bills in fact do make the policy changes that are necessary to implement things that would allow for streamlining of process. So whenever you can enable through technology, the use of live capture scanning makes the process more efficient and effective and reduces the number of people
who are... They do it on TV every night.
...who are necessary to do that work. Certainly, your idea about a background check being good for 6 months and being notified of potential offenses, Representative Nathanson's bill around creation of a wrap back program would do that. So from I think the chair of the work group sits in, and on behalf of the Office of the Chief Operating Officer, I think we agree and believe that the process should be streamlined. I think we think there are some necessary policy changes that need to be made in order to implement some of that streamlining. I think, I serve at the pleasure of a director who has a convening of the agency heads who are the responsible implementers for most of the largest state agency users of this process. And so I think we absolutely can make tactical implementation of streamlining possible with some policy changes. And so should Representative Nathanson's bills be successful, I think you will see streamlining happen. I think you'll see the process be more efficient and effective in its service to Oregonians. And, in the best possible scenario, you'll see cost savings result from that.
Thank you.
So, quick question. When the state police send the records to the FBI, do you know if they keep those records or how long they keep those records or what do they do with them?
Co-Chair Hovey, Co-Chair Wisnett, and members of the committee, I believe that they have to destroy them. They are not kept electronically at this point.
Okay. Yes, the fingerprint cards.
Yes.
So how are they going to make a wrap back system work in 2014 without keeping those?
Co-Chair Hovey, Co-Chair Wisnett, that would require them implementing a electronic storage for those non-criminal fingerprint checks. They do currently store fingerprints for criminal cases.
So another question, do we have the ability at the state to at least calculate how many of our people have multiple background checks currently? I mean, trying to get at the cost and the initial cost savings if a background check was good for 2 years and we had transferability in place. Looking at how many background checks is that going to eliminate? mean, this is something that's going to be probably important for us to know down the road before we make a decision on whether this makes sense to do or not. We have to be able to calculate the savings. So do we have any information about that?
Co-Chair Hovey, Co-Chair Wisnet, my understanding is that that is not something with electronic information we have today that we can really accurately capture, unfortunately.
The same one, okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about processing that. any other questions? Doesn't appear to be. Thank you very much for your report, and thanks for all the work that you've put into this. I'm sure we're going to be delving into it a little bit more in depth as the session goes on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll close the informational meeting on the criminal records checks. And committee, now we have a series of bill. And Jan, do we have a list of all those bills? Oh, here it is. And we can either move these all at once or separately. We'll just go through and do them separately, I guess. Give us a chance to listen to those bills. So I'll open a work session for the purpose of introducing committee bills. And members, your support of allowing the committee to introduce these as committee bills does not mean that the committee or any individual member supports or opposes said legislative concept. So with that, Jan, do you want to give us just a brief description of the first LC?
A very brief, more than the relating clause, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
What time is it? Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, committee members, LC 277 is relating to animals. This bill would prohibit ownership of or employment at an animal grooming parlor or boarding kennel if the person's been convicted of specified crimes, and it requires the owner of the parlor or the kennel to request a criminal offender report from the Oregon State Police before hiring the employee. It imposes care requirements, health-related requirements, and record-keeping requirements on the boarding kennel owner. And in statutes that are pertaining to offenses involving animals, it replaces the word owner with the word keeper so as to include persons who are in possession of the animal. And this was a bill that the committee heard in an informational hearing during the interim. I think it was the main interim meeting, and we had people from Bend come over. If you'll recall, they talked about their dog that had been that they believed had been injured in a kennel, and that bill has been reworked and is now in LC 277.
So I'm ready for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move LC Draft 277, dated September 11th, 2012, be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Sheehan.
Yeah.
Moves LC Draft 277, dated September 11th, 2012, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
I just will say it's a... Representative Clem, any discussion?
Oh, thank you. I just had a question for you. If I vote no, can I then file a minority report and try and introduce another committee bill?
No.
Oh, thanks.
So as we're trying to, you know, restrict the amount of and reduce and streamline the amount of criminal checks, I think this bill is sort of interesting that we would be introducing it, but all the same. Any other discussion? Those of opinion that LC Draft 277 should be introduced as a committee bill will say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. LC Draft 277 will be introduced as a committee bill. LC 1161.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, LC 1161 adds consignment sales to the statutes that are regulating auctions and auction marts. Brings consignment sales under the UTPA, requires auctioneer, the auction mart, the op, and the consignee to account for all monies received in payment for the client's property. And it requires the return of any unsold property to the client within 21 days after the sale unless they agree to some different date.
You want to do them all?
Thank you. This has been suggested to me, and I was kind of wanting to go down this road anyway. Why don't we go ahead and read the rest of the LCs?
Object.
Do them all in one?
Objection overruled.
We're over two down here.
LC 1724 is relating to the regulation of charitable organizations. It allows the Attorney General to disqualify a charitable organization from receiving state tax deductible contributions if the organization doesn't expend at least 30% on program services. LC 1736 is relating to dog training facilities, and it prohibits the application of the structural specialty code to pre-existing farm buildings or other buildings used as dog training facilities. LC 1868 is relating to appraisals, and it requires appraisal management companies to pay the independent contractor appraiser within 30 days of submitting their completed appraisal report. LC 1962 is relating to the amusement industry, and it requires the amusement inspector to meet qualifications established by DCBS, allows DCBS to establish a certification system, and it requires the owner of the amusement ride or the device or the rental amusement device to maintain a quality control program, makes additional changes to the requirements for obtaining an operating permit, requires the owner to take the ride or the device out of service if it's involved in a serious incident or accident, and it brings inflatable structures and rock walls under the definition of rental amusement device. The last one, LC 1965, is relating to the amusement industry. It reduces the role of DCBS in regulating amusement rides, devices, and rental amusement devices. It requires the inspector to meet qualifications established by the agency and imposes strict liability on the owner for the damages caused by the operation of the ride or the device that is contrary to statute, rule, or the insurer's restrictions and conditions.
Thank you. And so the motion I'd be looking for would be for the rest of those LCs. And Representative Sheehan.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC drafts 1161, dated November 30th, 2012, LC 1724, dated November 2nd, 2012, LC 1736, dated.
1736, dated 10/31.
Dated October 10/31. LC 1868,
October 5th,
dated October 5th, 2012, LC 1962,
October 15th,
dated October 15th, and LC 1965,
October
dated
10th.
October 10th, be introduced as a committee, as committee bills.
Thank you. Representative Sheehan is moved that we introduce LC 1161, LC 1724, LC 1736, LC 1868, LC 1962, and LC 1965 as committee bills. Is there discussion?
Nice move.
Seeing no discussion, those of the opinion that the LCs referenced should be introduced as committee bills will say aye.
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 Those opposed? Ayes have it. The motion carries. And LCs 1161, LC 1724, LC 1736, LC 1868, LC 1962, and LC 1965 will be introduced as committee bills. With that, I will close the work session for the purposes of introducing committee bills. And committee, I've just requested that just for your review, the House General Government Consumer Protection Committee during the interim held several informational hearings and other things. Amongst those,
We are taking recommendations of the Public Construction Contracting Work Group. It was an ongoing work group looking at public contracting and the use of alternative bidding contracts. That legislative concept will be introduced as a committee bill on the Senate side. We had informational hearings on many foreclosure issues, on vacant positions in government, criminal records checks, of course, the kennel and groomer regulation. We had informational hearings on pre-need funeral products and services, and the requirements on debt buyers bringing legal action. So those are some of the informational hearings that we had. We also had a review of the Secretary of State's audit of state boards and commissions. We examined the activity scope allowed under various construction and landscape-related licenses. We also looked at administrative rules for mortgage loan servicers. We also heard about the implementation of the foreclosure avoidance mediation program and assistance to distressed homeowners through the Oregon Homeownership Stabilization Initiative. With that, we did look at a lot of different issues, and I'm fairly certain that we'll see legislation on several of those issues, if not all of them. And that was just a brief little review of that. I want to express my thanks to the committee members and my co-chair, Representative Wisnett, for the work that we've done. I think we did get some things accomplished over the last session and during the interim, and look forward to working with most of you in the future.
I think we have to also appreciate our committee administrator and committee assistant. Thank you very much. Jan's role was invaluable.
Yeah, it definitely is appreciated. Our staff always serves us well, and even our individual staff members also help in this process. But, yeah, special thanks to Ms. Norland and our committee administrator. We've had our assistant. We've had a few. I'd like to thank all of them. I'm sure we'll be working with them in some capacities. Not sure whether it will be in this committee or not, but time will tell. Again, I appreciate the committee's patience. Some of the subject matter of this committee has been riveting, and some of it has been unriveting. And
unriveting. Taking rivets out.
With that, I appreciate everybody's work. We're all here trying to make the state of Oregon a better place, and sometimes we agree and sometimes we don't. So with that, I will adjourn the House Interim Committee on General Government, Consumer Protection.